we meet today on a sad occasion where one of the daughters of South Africa was brutally murdered, a student from UCT, Ms. Mkhwetja Uyinene. Mkhwetja was killed in a government facility, that being a post office. It takes time for us as South Africans to do a proper and thorough introspection as to what we have become, or rather are becoming. And I would like to implore on all of you in the course of the day and the week ahead to take time to reflect on this femicide that we are witnessing, the brutality meted out every day on defenseless women and children, and ask ourselves as public representatives, as South Africans, what we are to become. I think we need to send a strong message out there that we can no longer tolerate such behavior, and harsh means and terms must be adhered to curb and not only just reduce this violence, but to bring an end to it. And I therefore, honorable members and officials gathered here, would like to ask you to add your voice on the campaign Am I Next? Women and children are defenseless in the streets, in their homes, in their place of work, and do not know who to turn to. Don't take it for granted because of where you are. Ensure that you are able to use your voice and to advocate for the women that are unable to speak. With that said, honorable members, we also want to reflect on the violence that is unbecoming. Africans turning on Africans, brothers and sisters throughout South Africa, the SADC region, and the African continent, beginning to illustrate the hatred amongst one another. We cannot and will not allow such criminality destroy the achievements that have been gained in the 26 years of our democracy. And again, I ask of you to be the voice of change, ensure that we are able to embark on nation building, on unifying our people for a common cause, and making this country, region, and the continent a better place for all to live. With that said, honorable members, we have successfully returned from an oversight trip that we have had in KwaZulu-Natal, visiting various projects carried out by the department. Perhaps at this juncture, I must appeal to the DG. From the beginning when we engaged on APPs and to date, Baumlengana, we have sent to your office questions that have gone unanswered, and no response at all in terms of even receiving any of those questions. I would like to appeal to you and your office to ensure that you take the matters of this portfolio committee as serious as we take them, because we would like to ensure that we have a smooth running of the daily engagements on the work that we do, so that the questions that are posed by various honorable members, we are able to ensure that they have been dealt with. But just to make some reflections, honorable members, on our own assessment and what we were able to witness during the oversight visit in KwaZulu-Natal, which took place on the 26th to the 30th of August, where honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform, and Rural Development were given an opportunity to visit about four district municipalities in KwaZulu-Natal, where we were able to visit a number of farms, and from those visits we had a number of observations that we would like to reflect on. And firstly, honorable members, would be the post-settlement support to farmers, which is generally characterized by poor levels of interdepartmental coordination and support. We found on our oversight that there is poor monitoring and evaluation of support programs, and this has impacted on the success of the programs that are being carried out by the department. A large number of farmers have not been able to access post-settlement support due to the requirements for business plans in order to access that support. Those who have been able to access post-settlement support have faced a number of challenges that many business plans have set unrealistic targets and have consequently been unable to achieve the desired goals. We also witnessed that there is generally a problem in respect of accountability and reporting on funds allocated, and this requires an urgent intervention from the department. It also appears that there is also a disconnect in respect of skills and training provided and the needs of the beneficiary farmers. What we found to be a major problem facing those who have been able to access post-settlement farmer support is the lack of access to markets. And this was a clear example from Chozini, where we were able to meet with Mjindi Farming and the irrigation support that was made available to the farmers, who said they are unable to access the Richards Bay market nor the Durban market, but also just generally the market in our frontline states like Swaziland, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Namibia, but also to look at the Greater SADC region and other regions in the continent and the African continent at large. We therefore would want to ensure that they are able to have a proper access to market. If this is not realized, it poses to be a disaster and will defeat the purpose of these programs. A recurring feature related to also what we came to witness in terms of the drought relief availed by government in 2015, 2016, ending in 2017 financial year, is the lack of accountability from farmers or beneficiaries themselves, also from government officials that supported that. We came to realize that there was 203 million rand spent on the drought relief, but we did not get an indication as to how many cattle had been lost during the drought, how many had been saved, how many bales or feed did a cow on a daily basis consume, and how much water was supplied. So that posed some serious challenges in terms of accounting for the funds received. This, DG, is a matter that requires the urgent attention of the department, and we would like it to be prioritized. In conclusion, honorable members, the Portfolio Committee of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development was able to fulfill its mandate of oversight in KwaZulu-Natal, as must call for a thorough review for the following. One, interdepartmental coordination. Two, enhance the capacity to provide a holistic and integrated support to farmers. Three, provide greater capacity to ensure improved financial management across all programs. Four, improved access to available funding to ensure greater success of government intervention. Five, to have a greater focus on matching in respect of mentoring and partnerships. Six, to establish a review of skills and training paradigm to ensure the relevant to ensure relevance in respect of the needs of farmers. Seven, the need for greater monitoring and evaluation capacity of the department in order to ensure that the proper milestones for success is implemented across post-settlement support programs. Seven, and lastly, the development of a database of beneficiaries of post-settlement support so that the progress may be tracked and the efficacy of interventions may be assessed in a more structured way. That, honorable members, is what we were able to see on various visits and in various projects that we were able to come across during our visit to KwaZulu-Natal. With that said, let me, DG, introduce on our side the honorable members that are attending today. We have Honorable Klabe. Honorable Klabe, that is seated on my near right. Honorable Chwete. Honorable Marlo. Honorable Kapa. Honorable Ndabezitha, Nkosi Qebekhulu. Honorable Sindane. Honorable Mbabama, Honorable Masipa, Honorable Priet, Honorable Stain. With that said, is there any apologies?
Thank you, Chair. I've got an apology from the Minister. She is out of the country. Apologies from the DMs. Deputy Squatcher is on a ministerial visit in Western Cape, and DM Jumo Dlamini is on sick leave. I also have apologies from MP Motuedi. He's running late, and Babu Thapa has just arrived. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. The program before us, we have then minutes of the 20th of August to attend to and matters arising. And then we are to have a briefing from the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development on agri-parks and all development support programs. We will perhaps request that we deal with the issues of CASP, RECAP, Ilimaletsima, Mafisa in this sitting. Agri-parks, honorable members, we would like to deal with as a separate item on its own. So if that is seconded, we can be able to deal with agri-parks on a standalone subject, because I don't think we will be doing justice in dealing with all of these in one session. We would like to revisit the agri-parks issue on its own. Any seconders? Honorable Stay.
Chairperson, yes, no, I think that is in order. I'm just worried about the time. Even if we deal with agri-parks as a separate issue, I don't think we're going to get through all of it. So I don't know, Chairperson, if we can look at cutting time on presentations, because we can all read. I think we have, except if other members feel differently, I know these projects and others might want more detail on that, but I think, Chair, we have received through our briefing and also I think through our visits last week some information. So if we can cut time on presentations, it will assist us. Chairperson, but I also want to take this opportunity to share your comments about the violence. I think it's very much worrisome, especially at a time when we as a country feels like we are all, you know, going in different directions, Chair. And I want to add also my voice on what happens, especially to women on farms, Chair, when rape and brutal attacks. No one stands up for that. And I think it's time that this portfolio also put some attention at the same time on that. Chair, and then lastly, I want to ask you a question, and I will put it also in writing to you. How do we deal with documentation and especially questions that come back in writing from the minister that differs totally from what we received in this portfolio? And I'm also asking this in light of our oversight last week. We will be receiving documentation, but when we arrive there, it's totally different. Because I think us as a portfolio committee needs to decide on a method that we can communicate with each other, and I will send you the details of that. I received a question in writing back to the minister on Friday as we left KZN on a project called Strengthening the Relative Rights of People Working on the Land 50-50 Project. And I looked back at a presentation that was given in this portfolio committee, and the totals, the times, I know it was 2 years apart, but it's totally different. So, you know, when we receive information, which ones do we trust? And I want us as a committee that just to think about that a bit on how do we deal with that. Thank you, Chair. In light also of what we're going to get today, because I asked last time that when we get presentations in this portfolio, it must be the correct information.
Thank you, Honorable Steyn, and noted. But I would think that all the questions that have been put to the department, when we get answers to, we will be able to make them available to the committee and also set time to be able to deal with the answers that have been put to us. Honorable Klappe.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, thanks for touching on issues of violence in this country, and especially on our young women. And I love the idea that we have to stand firm as a country and as women on these matters. I agree with your suggestion, Chair, that AgriParks be a standalone item for later or at some stage. Just want to check, Chair, is the a standing like procedural agreement on when do members receive presentations for a portfolio committee? I'm saying this because we knew we have adopted the program that we have in this discussion today. Yesterday, most members are traveling. You arrive here 9 o'clock. Your email is flooded with presentations that you need to go through and deal with. I don't know whether it is the department or is it our portfolio staff, but I don't think it is fair for honorable members in this regard. Even if we have an idea of what is happening in programs, we also define capacities of absorbing what is in at a go. And we shouldn't be doing presentations and engaging with these matters for sake of compliance. Our interest is the impact of these programs on the ground. Now, it cannot be fair, it cannot be okay that we receive presentations like some 7 hours before we come into a meeting. And like you indicated, Chair, in the beginning, we would want to work together with this department cordially so. I have seen in the past where departments were retained for such issues. It can't be correct. And we would want an improvement in that regard because we will not engage with issues that are coming for the very same fact that Honorable Sen is saying. You come here with a different presentation and you have seen something different on the ground. So it is a plea that let's be allowed some space to deal with documentation so that we also ease your work as a chair on this portfolio when we deal with matters when we have received documentation in time. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Tabe, and I'm happy that you were raising the issue of presentation while the DG Uba Mlengane is here. I remember in our earliest and the first sessions we had, he was one to sponsor the sentence that I hope honorable members have read. And you can clearly see, DG, that this committee of the Sixth Parliament wants to read, wants to engage with documents. But we would request, and I want to assure honorable members that all the documents that we receive come late. We want to appeal to the department and DG for you to take this seriously, that if we are having a meeting on Tuesday, the latest by Friday, end of business day, we would like to have all the presentations with us, so that we are able to ensure that members over the weekend are able deal with the presentations and apply their minds to it, so we can have a proper and fruitful engagement. We also have the acting DG with us on rural development, so we would like to acknowledge your presence in this meeting. With that said, honorable members, I will therefore ask the department to give a briefing on the presentations that they have sent us. With the exclusion of AgriParks. We will come back to the minutes and matters arising, honorable members, once we've concluded with the department. Honorable Montwete, welcome. Good to have you with us.
I'll give it hand over to us. Yes. Good morning, honorable chair, honorable members, we just greet you in the absence of our principals. We trust that you will present what is objective is has got some sense to you and to the people above all who are supposed to serve. Chairman Miller said the issues you've raised are of great concern and they tend to occupy space similar to the one where you are addressing the issue of these delays to Parliament. I flag that issue to the extent that it's a process number one issue, and now I've come to a point, Chair, where everyone signs. So I just want to be specific on it, Chair, because I'm tracking it. We put 7 days in between, and there is evidence, Chair, that this committee receives that. And my, because this is documented on the 27th of August, at about 3 o'clock, documents arrived to this office. And on our side, that is science, is proof is there. And we received also, the night before we came here, a document that is requesting that we must submit on Monday, say these attitudes. I'm saying the team is busy applying itself on this, and we've got this 7 day period that we have said presentation must reach the office of the Honorable Chair. And now from that side, I'm receiving this document that I must answer it on Monday. Where is that gap? So I think, Chair, by putting those examples, I want to say this problem has been singled out and is tracked, and there is a person up to the chief director who's responsible for that, to smooth that and get confirmation. So I would say, without saying your opinion, the opinions of the members, I disregard, I'm not at all. I just want to highlight the extent to which we have grappled with this thing. We've got it. We've got it. The tail is there. We've got it. And we can prove it. So, Chair, it is number one. And I hope it won't come again. And I think the second point, Chair, I must just thank this sixth administration that's oversighting us. It's just the whole pragmatic approach to let's go in. And for the first time, my officials are confronted with this. The integrity of what they are presenting is marked in this. We may be not doing it right because we are doing these stories boring to them. And informal, I was talking to the one of the honourable members, and then the way we were so disappointed, we feel like you can just talk instead of giving us all this glory. And when we go on the ground, this glory is not there. So the integrity of our presentations have come to the fore in a very negative manner. And I think to that effect, Chair, that has stressed the imagination. It never existed before. Just the whole idea of let's follow the money, basic, let's follow cash. No, we gave it to you at the province, Dora does this and that, the eggs. And that was it. Because every sphere now by constitution was almost saying, provinces, you don't catch me. District, I'll be okay, but I'm controlled by the province. Yet that poison, when they finish eating it, I'm the one who dies on top. So we were trying to fix that pretty much, and we recognize the Chair as we are about to present. And we, I must say on behalf of the department, we are excited about the manner in which you have begun to isolate theory from practice and therefore drew us as officials to be honest and faithful in interacting with our beneficiaries or our stakeholders. Saying that, the Chair, I would, I was said to my colleague this morning, we have gone through this, they know CAS, they went through the audit thing, don't narrate too much. That they know. I think let's go to the issues they know so that they come back that you know the same as they do, and this is how we are going to deal with these issues. I think it is from that approach most of the vehicles for product growth are going to be approached. And I hope my colleagues will go into a summation to the best that you can flag and say, please explain, I need to know more. Because of the fact that we don't want to bore you more with theoretical perspective of how we implement programs. We want to one day to talk about the impact of programs, and that becomes the agenda. With our customers coming here and saying, yes, we're presenting, we've got food as a result of your assistance. And that is the objective of where I would like to find ourselves in. That having been said, Chair, with your permission, I will release the first presentation, which not necessarily followed the order. It just went on CASP, Comprehensive Agricultural Programs. Is that ILIMA? Yes, ILIMA and CASP. So she will be specific through Mrs. Mchiza will be specific in her address of one of those components, one being pretty much infrastructural based and the other one being more family agricultural based, if you will.
Thank you, DG. Let's be mindful of time. Each presentation, we will only allow 20 minutes for the presentation and questions. So do not read page by page, but just focus on the highlights. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Elda Mchiza. I'm the Chief Director responsible for the two conditional grants, which is CASP and ILIMA LITSIMA, as a transferring officer. The presentation outline emphasized mainly on introducing the program to the Portfolio Committee. So we put in why CASP, considering that this is a new PC, how it fits into the mandate as guided by the question that needed, what we needed to respond to, what are the policy imperatives that are informing this investment, what has been allocated to these programs since inception, and we tried to focus on what is planned in the 2019-20 business plan, ideally because the portfolio committee is supposed to be, would be providing direct oversight in the 1920 plans that have been submitted to us. We will touch on what has been achieved since the impact study was done, as well as the challenges which we have experienced in the program. In terms of history, I'm tempted to just touch a little bit on it, in the interest of time. The members have read, but mainly the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program was actually an ambitious program which was developed in 2004 with the aim of trying to respond to the gap that was created when the Agriculture Credit Board was closed up. And with the closure of the Agriculture Credit Board, there was also reduced support to your institutions, which then used to provide support to farmers, which are your ARCs, your CSIR at the time. And this led to direct and indirect support to emerging farmers who are now the new holders of land and farmland, receiving little to no support from these institutions. And it became impossible for them to also access credit because there was no development fund that was available for their growth. The ACB, failure to replace the ACB with a similar type of an institution led the African smallholder failing to meet the development of their lands, as I had indicated, which is mainly to cultivate and bring into production their newly acquired lands. And also the changes to the marketing environment, which had been dominated by marketing boards. Any single channel marketing system meant that the agricultural cooperatives, who were farmer-based entities at that time, had now become privatized, leading to further support going to those who were not members of those companies or cooperatives. Considering this historical context, then there was the development of this comprehensive farmer support program with an intent to ensure that you bring closer grant funding as well as loan support to beneficiaries, as was advised by the Strauss Commission. In terms of the objectives of CASP, it was set out, as I had indicated, to deliver a wide range of economic, social, and environmental benefits. On the economic front, it was meant to produce higher levels of productive efficiencies for these new farmers, create on-farm and off-farm jobs, increase incomes and wealth of these producers, as well as within the rural economy. Improve impacts of CASP on agricultural sector will gain momentum as the support is increased to these beneficiaries, significantly attracting domestic and
and foreign capital as well, and also leading to the reversal of inequities in farmland access as well as youth rights inherited from apartheid. That was now the economic benefit. It was meant to increase the opportunity for wealth creation in rural spaces. In terms of social benefits, it was meant to contribute to household and national food security and significantly reduce poverty, improve rural living standards, reduce crime, violence, and social political instability, because there would be a thriving economy within those rural spaces. And on the environmental front, it was meant to ensure that ecologically sustainable farming practices are enhanced, meaning that beneficiaries would then be educated and capacitated on how to manage the land responsibly. The pillars of CASP are broad. It is it's based on six pillars, which includes provision of on and off farm infrastructure support, knowledge and information management to beneficiaries, as well as technical and advisory support services. We also need to focus on training and building the capacity of these producers, but more importantly, we needed to focus on increasing market access and also assisting these farmers with developing their business acumen. And lastly, we needed to come up with affordable financial services where they would be able to access loans. That program was then branded as Nafisa, as it would be presented to yourself. It was the sixth pillar of CASP. And the reason why it was also managed separately was that the Strauss Commission had already recommended that the state should not be involved in providing loan itself, hence the drive to appoint intermediaries for the issuing of these loans to our farmers, which were cheap loans at the time and still are cheap loans. The target population for CASP was meant for the hungry, the previously disadvantaged subsistence smallholder, as well as commercial farmers, entrepreneurs in the sector, because we needed to focus on value chain financing, as well as the groups, which includes your youth, women, and people with disabilities, which we identified as vulnerable groups. We have the National Development Plan, and this is showing how CASP fits into the NDP. We are guided by the NDP, which advocates for integrated and inclusive rural economy to focus on growing the economy and increase jobs by expanding irrigated agriculture. We need to pick and support those industries and regions with the highest growth and job potential. We also need to focus on value chains and agro-processing, and more importantly, focus on land reform by developing strategies that give new entrants access to value chains. And we need also to find creative combinations between opportunities. So these vision statements guide the framework in terms of what are the expected outcomes for the program CASP as well as ELEMA Disabled. We have picked up the following policy imperatives, which also guide the output and the outcomes of our program. We need to focus on jobs being created. We need also to focus on expanding commercial agriculture, but more importantly, introducing and commercializing our black producers. We need also to focus on putting, at least at the time, 1 million hectares on unutilized land under production, which was the FESA dollar target by 2019. We were also aiming at supporting at least 300,000 smallholder farmers between 2014 and 2019. We also had to expand irrigated agriculture land as well as ensuring food security for all. At the time, I think we were having a percentage of over 14 million individuals who were found to be food insecure through the general household survey, and of course ensure sustainable use of natural resources, but also increase the agricultural contribution to the GDP. This slide, honorable members, is showing us the allocation of CASP since inception, you'd realize that the allocation of CASP has increased since inception in 2004. We had an allocation of only 200 million, which increased up to 1.75 billion in 2018-19, and the figures for 2019 I'm going to show now is down to 1.5 billion because 15% of the CASP budget we had to argue for it to be put into blended funding to assist in commercializing black producers. We have since seen over 11,420 projects, and the total spending of the budget as at end of 2018 was 12.7 billion. And we have, I'm cautious to give that 678,000 number of beneficiaries as an add-on, because what usually happens, our projects are multi-year in most instances, so it's better to see how much money per annual had reached how many beneficiaries in that particular year. But it's also dangerous to just add the figures and say we have seen 678,000. And in the absence of a database for producer support, which we are really working hard at having it, it becomes impossible to then confirm the 678,000, which is showing there. For Ilima Lesima, the program, as DG had indicated, is now trying to strengthen support towards food production and supporting vulnerable households in particular. So the emphasis on putting lands under production was heightened in 2008, which is when the program Ilima Lesima started. And to date, 4.1 billion has been spent within this space. And we have seen better use of the funding of Ilima Lesima in that 4.1, almost 96% or 97% of the budget was spent purchasing inputs, mechanization, as well as revitalizing irrigation schemes. And those are the number of beneficiaries per annum which has been supported through the grants. On the goals, Chair, and the purpose, I'm going to pass. And the business plan for 2019-20, we are pulling on, as I had indicated, the numbers that are receiving support, both in terms of category as reflected for the improved farming efficiency, as we have seen in terms of the goal for the program. We need to track this for us to improve farming efficiencies. We look at the farmers trained, we look at the farmers mentored, we look at the support that is received from extension officers and the numbers of extension officers that are being recruited in the system and the resources to do their work which is provided, as well as revitalization of the agricultural colleges which is currently happening. And then of course we track the jobs that are being produced or that are going to be created through these interventions per province. Through CASP in the current financial year, we are expecting a 7,156. And in terms of preparing our farmers for market access, we have a program which we are implementing together with the PPECB, which is the Perishable Product Export Control Board. In this, we target promising farmers and we teach them on market standards and we audit their farms so that they can be SA GAP certified and Global GAP certified for them to be able to access opportunities for markets. We have also given you in Flight 19 the progress for this program since we started it with PPECB, where over 275 farmers are participating in the program. We have pre-audits done to 210, and you'd also note the provinces that are really lagging behind in supporting or bringing these farmers onto the fold, because what we need to pull from the lists that are provided to us to be able to indicate or pull out the ones that are successful, which we can put into the program. you will see also the total number of farmers that are now certified. So it's an intense exercise. It guides also what infrastructure needs to happen. So there are soft issues which need to be attended to, and there are hardcore issues like infrastructure which then needs to be put in place for these farmers to be able to get the SAGAP certification. Sometimes it includes putting up proper pack sheds, toilets, and so on. We are also embarking on a program to place unemployed graduates on farms. We have already recruited 1,000 throughout the country, which was done in the 2018-19 financial year. They have a three-year program which would be placed on commercial farms. It's more to gain experiential learning as well as exposure to entrepreneurship and how farms are managed. From this pool, we are hoping these would be your candidates that would be allocated farms through land reform to become young farmers. Some of them would choose to go back and become scientists with experience on farming. Some would choose to be farm managers. But ideally, we would want the pool to become our future farmers. We have also an outcome where we are looking at biosecurity measures, improving systems required for maintenance of food and mouth disease, particularly for Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, and Mpumalanga, because where FMD affects those three countries, the impact to the country and to the very farmers that we are supporting becomes huge in that they cannot export their produce. So we have targeted these three provinces through CAF to ensure that all their animals are vaccinated, all the lands that need fencing, the red fencing are in place, and so on. For the current financial year, this would be the first time we fund from CAF the Kaonafatso ya Diphoofolo ya Dikgomo, and we have a program which we are going to be implementing with the ARC to support 13,700 livestock producers, and these are the targets that have been set for the current financial year. Ilima Letsema, we have explained what it's all about. We are tracking lands that are put under production. We have already 92,000 hectares in our current business plan which needs to be put under production, with an estimated yield of 278,000 primarily on maize. Thank you. So with regard to the business plan for Ilima, we have indicated the targets, and also have mentioned that with Ilima Letsema we irrigate our schemes. The summary of the business plans for both CASP and Ilima, which would be tracked in the current financial year by the members, is given, as well as the MTF allocation and the budget for Ilima and CASP for the current financial year. The disbursement schedule, we transfer these funds to provinces as is required by the Division of Revenue Act, and these are the tranches which are disbursed. They are guided by the key activities in the business plan per quarter, which the province would have set to the panel they would be embarking on per each project. I had mentioned that we had an impact study report made, and I know there's a number of challenges which we all find and we know, and to a large extent we keep on focusing on them, and we decided to just share some of the improvements which we picked up from the impact study, because this is not shared, and we wanted the PC to note that if things were to be done right and if we were to increase and improve on our monitoring, we could actually do more in increasing these good results that were picked up by the DPME through this impact study. It was found that there is a potential to improve the income of beneficiaries who have received CAP. It was also found that continually for the projects that were supported, the jobs were increased. So, yes, we can increase jobs through these projects that are supported. We can improve market access, because 85% of the sample that was assessed were having access to market when market was not available before. So if we do things right, we can actually improve market access. So this is actually something that says the program can actually result in the goals that were set And the challenge is really in us, as has been identified. We were found not to be adequately able to monitor CASP, and this has a large extent to do with the fact that it is still managed not as part of the structure of DAF, and there's poor integration and capacity to follow up on the money, which is what is being attended to. There's, as a result, repeat audit findings, both at particularly at provincial level, where provinces have been found to choose not to implement what has been approved by national and not asking permission for the changes that we have made. And we talk to what honourable members have said, to say we come and we present, but what then gets done on the ground is what was not really shared to a large extent. It was not even authorised. I really need to say that, because our plan says something else. Misalignment of reporting timelines has been found to be one of the key issues, in that the Division of Revenue Act timelines are different from the DPME timelines. As a result, the report that comes through the DPME process is different from the one that will now come and account for the funding that we have given. And one of the key objectives, we have found to have too many programs that are operating in silos, and the impact study suggested that the most effective way and efficient way of supporting farmers would be to redesign all farmer support programs and do away with the existing silos of farmer support. And I think Minister Tokodidiza has already started by pulling us into developing an integrated producer support model. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mamu Mochiza. We'll take another presentation, DG, and then be able to get into questions after the second presentation.
Okay, good morning, honorable members. I'm going to give a presentation on MAPISA. And as explained in the previous presentation, this is one of the pillars of CAS, which provides...
And you are?
Oh, okay. My apologies. My name is Mkangwe Ramashia. Okay. So I was starting by saying MAPISA is a pillar of CASP.
Yes. Sorry, Chair, just put it off. I think it's the first time for him to present. I think he has got some butterflies. And I will assist him a little bit, because he's our chief director in what we call development finance under the CFO. So we're trying to push all development finance towards him. It feels strange a little bit, because that's what it was, because we were saying, let MAPISA be a VA finance vehicle and tracking, and the programs out of MAPISA be driven at program level. So we're trying to go there. So it's a little bit amiss, but we are going to go there. So there, I think you can relax through your chair. You can relax and go on.
DG, you've already taken 3 minutes of his 20-minute allocated. Please allow Mr. Ramashie to proceed. And he hasn't disclosed to us that he's got black butterflies. So, thank you.
Okay, thanks. This is a government-supported financial scheme, and the main reason why it was formed is that there are many smallholder farmers who do not qualify to get funding from our formal financial institutions like banks. So because the lending criteria here is a little bit more relaxed, then it gives them an opportunity to qualify. Then this scheme is accessed through intermediaries. And then the way that we operate is that funds revolve within the intermediaries for the operation of the agreement. I think what happens is, as government, we do not provide loans direct to farmers. What we did was to accredit intermediaries through which the smallholder farmers can now apply. The objective is to provide finance to smallholder farmers. In terms of what does it contribute to government outcomes, it contributes to job creation, food security, as well as economic.
Mr. Kwangwa, please come closer to the mic and just please. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The institutional arrangements are such that the funds are kept at the land bank, and then each intermediary has been allocated funds, and then applications for the loans, when smallholder farmers need loans, are considered by the accredited intermediaries. And then these intermediaries operate according to the MAFISA credit policy, which has been provided to them. And then these intermediaries also assist us in terms of collecting repayments from the farmers. And then the way that these intermediaries are paid for their services is that they are paid from interest that is earned on the recovered loans. And then coming to the terms of and conditions of the funds that were transferred to intermediaries, the amount transferred to intermediaries depend on the capacity of the intermediary, and then the intermediaries are required to be registered credit providers, and then these intermediaries charge 7% per annum for interest, and then that 7% interest they keep as a payment for their services. Then in terms of how the funds flow, because the funds are kept at the land bank, if there is a need for a transfer to be made to an intermediary, an instruction signed by DAF accounting officer is issued to the land bank so that they can make the necessary transfers. So this just explains the target market that MAFISA is targeting. You'll see down there we have MAFISA smallholder farmers. So we're looking at a situation where there is a high risk for the farmers, and also the cost of recovery for financial institutions is high. That is why government is getting in there, because the private sector, because of those reasons of high cost recovery and the high risk, they are not able to play in that space. So this slide just gives an indication, since the inception of MAFISA, how much has been transferred to the land bank. These are funds that have been transferred to the land bank for transfer to the intermediaries at a later stage. Okay, this slide just gives an indication of the current balance of MAFISA funds at the land bank. I think we're at 12 million currently. And then slide 20 just shows that, you know, there were two phases to this. There was a pilot phase and there was the real implementation. So during the pilot, these were the figures that were dispersed, and those were the number of the beneficiaries. This slide just shows from 2009-10 up until March 2019, the total amounts disbursed, the total number of beneficiaries, the repayments, as well as the jobs created. In terms of the repayments, out of the 406 million that have been loaned to the smallholder farmers, a total amount of 254 million has been collected as repayments, which is I think it's about 62% of the total amount loaned. Okay, there was an impact assessment that was done independently on Mafisa in 2015, and then the report that came out there was that, you know, although there were also some weaknesses, but there were also some positive things that came out of that impact assessment. There was also a finding that the loans have made a difference, but on a small scale. Also the issue of the limited number of intermediaries. And what also came out was that there is a huge demand for working capital, which is unmet. So which means that because of the small number of intermediaries and also the amount that is available, you know, although we are trying to meet this demand, it still remains high. It was also found out that the capacity to monitor and also support the intermediaries was also inadequate. So currently we are at a situation where Mafisa funds are depleted. And then we also find that some of the intermediaries are not financially sustainable. I think this is important because if these intermediaries are not financially sustainable, we may find ourselves in a position where we may not be able to recollect the funds, and we may also not be able to recycle the funds, you know, to other smallholder farmers. Currently, we are sitting with a situation where if, for example, a farmer applies for, say, 100,000, that farmer can only maybe get maybe 50,000 based on the fact that the fund does not have enough money. I'll just come now to some of the recommendations. That there is a need to refinance the scheme, because if we can also link this up to what came out of the impact assessment, it is saying there is a huge need for working capital which is not met in the market. So currently Mafisa interest rate is kept at 7%, and because this is what is used to reimburse the farmers, you have to reimburse the intermediaries. They've been complaining that this 7% is not enough in order for them to be able to cover their operating expenses, because for them to really assess until they disburse, they must first also be able to go and visit the farm and see what is going on there so that they can actually determine the true needs. And if, you know, you look at the fact that there are 9 provinces, so it means that if maybe an intermediary is based in one province, so there is a lot of traveling that needs to be done in order to reach those farmers. So one of the recommendations there is perhaps this is something that should have been done at the beginning. And also when we look at how other countries approach schemes like ours, we find that when they begin, they assist these intermediaries so that, you know, they can be sustainable. They assist them with the subsidies on issues like rent, information systems. Maybe you can do that maybe for the first 5 years so that they can be able to be set up and then be able to run on a sustainable basis. Okay. The other recommendation is that there is a need to increase the intermediaries. I think this is linked to that one of funds that are currently depleted. There is also a need to increase the product range. For example, sometimes, you know, we do have adverse weather conditions that really affect farmers. And when that happens, they are not able to repay as planned. And as a result, we are recommending that, you know, we should also come up with an insurance product, which will also help to smoothen the incomes of the farmers. The last slide just indicates what projects are out there, the projects that have been funded. So the first one is the sugarcane project. This is funded by SASA. It's over 11 hectares and it employs one permanent and there are 5 people who are seasonally employed. This is just another project. This one is over 14 hectares and it is just 2 permanent employees and also 6 seasonal workers. Let me just go to other intermediaries. Okay, I think this doesn't have the other intermediaries, but this is just an example. We also do have projects like that have been funded by the South African Sugar Association, funded by the Ulwana, funded by NERPO as well in different provinces. So in conclusion, we're saying that the founding reasons for my visa still exist because it is the only government-supported loan scheme that addresses the needs of smallholder farmers. And if it is well-supported, it has the potential to be sustainable. And then the model can also be used as a basis for improving the current finance models that we have. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. There's your presentation on CASP, as well as MAFISA. We will take questions or clarity on the two presentations. Start right here next to me, honorable Klappe.
Thanks, Chair. The first presentation, Lima Lezima and CASP. Let me go to my notes. My points are based on slide 11. Policy imperatives informing investments. And this we asked Chair, and I know it has been a concern for this portfolio. As where are we as a department in terms of all these points, potential to create 1 million jobs by 2030. We are left with 8 years. If not 9. But my point here is, how do we measure the jobs we are creating as a department? How do we monitor them? Are they permanent jobs? or they are just seasonal jobs, because the department, in a way, has got a way of creating seasonal jobs. But at the end of 2030, when we will be talking about jobs, will it be the permanent jobs that we are reporting, or are we including the casual jobs? Put 1 million hectares of unutilized land under production by 2019. Number three, where are we? It's 2019. Have we achieved this? Did we see it coming that we're not going to achieve, or did we have any plans to review the target, or are we still standing on this matter at 2019, 1 million hectares? It goes on, got the 300,000 smallholder producers, 2019. Expansion of those hectares under irrigation. Question marks also there. What is the report? Or are we going to have this report by the end of the fourth quarter? And we found ourselves wanting what we haven't achieved. Probably I must also ask Chair Hore, in case we see we're not going to achieve a target that has been set, what do we do? Do we review midterm before we go to 2019, or do we just carry on even if we see that this thing is not achievable, or for some other reasons, like your climate change on everything, or we are not going to achieve, or do we carry on until the last date and we said we could not achieve because of climate change, we could not achieve because of budget? Issues of food security, Chair. This for sure I would have to, my interest is to say just in percentage terms, what is our percentage as a department in terms of food security? I used to track it previously. I knew, for an example, that in 2014 Northwest was number 9. By 2017, he was number 6, moved from 3 spaces. And it's something that we are very passionate about as a department, the issues of food security. How are we faring across provinces on issues of food security? Or do we wait for the statistician general to give us this and we start making plans? Chair, we spoke about mentoring, training farmers. And it has been an issue when we go through this report for what are we training our farmers on as a department. I'm looking at the CAS 2019-20 business plans, number of farmers trained 26,806. Issues are mentoring. Is it thing of mentoring working for us as a department? Or do we really need to carry on program and mentoring? And members would know, and the department, or we just coming from a visit like it has been indicated, and we found appalling conditions of issues in mentoring, where we were even saying, is it not time that we review Kenya mentoring? Giving a mentor 15,000 whilst the farmer himself doesn't even have cash flow to run the farm. Do we really find this program working? And I want to couple it this with the issue of unemployed graduates slide. But is it not better probably to use this unemployed graduates instead of mentoring? Or mentors, because they are getting stipends, and find a way or another role to use the money at the mentors, because when we have your unemployed graduates being farm managers, running the farm on behalf of the farmers, is it not better to use this program, strengthen this one, instead of having mentors that are never there, that don't have interest of your farmers at some stage? Not all of them, but in the main, you find that it is the very same farmer that you buy in farm from. The next thing, he becomes the mentor and nothing goes on. I would also ask the department, or how do we access the service here, the unemployed graduates as farmers, if I'm a farmer, because this will also help those that doesn't have the know-how, where your extension officers don't have the capacity or are inadequate to move in all areas where you don't have these mentors. How do you access this service of unemployed graduates, seeing that they have been allocated their stipends that they get? So, that will be on this first presentation. Do we continue with the second one also? Okay. Mafisa. I'm happy that, I don't know if it's a correct way to say, but you are saying the funds are depleted here. Because I'm really not convinced, looking at the presentation, listening to the presentation, that Mafisa has been able to make an impact. One, the department bemoans the incapacity to monitor the fund. They don't have capacity to monitor Mafisa. Mafisa also has been in other provinces funding various sectors. And at the end, there's a recommendation that says it has to be just on the lending of farmers. I wanted to know the current intermediaries. I saw names here and there. These ones that they say, because there's a slide that they say some of them don't have capacity, they need to be assisted. They still want to increase intermediaries, but the funds are depleted. Hence, I'm saying I'm happy for now at the stage where we are. They don't have funds for Mafisa. Because the challenges and the weaknesses are more than the positive impact of Mafisa. I think, Chair, to wrap on Mafisa, I would say, is it not time that we review the policy of Mafisa first, before you even think of government needs to refinance Mafisa scheme? For the very same points that you raised, of being unable to monitor it, and so that you build capacity first, you monitor Mafisa, and also you deal with this thing of saying Mafisa funds should be ring-fenced and only be used for lending to farmers. Because if it's used for farmers only, you will be able to monitor it. But about four provinces here, it's indicated various sectors. So probably if you could just mold it, package it correctly, that we're using it only for lending farmers, and not any other sector except the agricultural sector that will be farmers, then we can talk about Mafisa. But I know that there's work that is being done now to make sure that we consolidate all these issues that farmers support under one umbrella. And I think Mafisa will find an expression for where will it eventually fall. But as it stands, it doesn't give me confidence. Because when you look at the slides, the last slides, beautiful pictures, Sabo Sara project, Andruma Zazi and whatever, it's smaller projects, Sabo 5 point something hectares, 11 hectares, 14 hectares, smallholder, whereas grants, not lending money, are being dished to those that have capacity. Now, I'm sitting here and saying, if a person has got 2 hectares or 14 hectares, why do you want to borrow or lend them? Why don't you give them grants, put them on a grant and support them so that you become better and expand and leave this Mafisa for your commercial farmers, people that are able to repay loans? Hence I'm saying I'm a bit happy that it says no, the funds are depleted. Let's package Mafisa and see how it works and what is it that we really want to do with this. My last question, Chair, I thought I will pick among these two presentations. Where do we get the money for blended finance that the President announced? is it from any of this? Because that money is sitting with Land Bank, that is accountable to Treasury, finding our commercial farmers, and we will be inviting them for sure to meet with them and saying, what is your institutional arrangement on the money that is going to be reimbursed? I'm saying this, Chair, because I remember at some stage the provinces had to agree to release some of the grants to Land Bank for the same purpose. And to, at this level, we are told Land Bank is accountable to Treasury. But in the back of my mind, I know provinces, out of their grants, what is due to them, this same department made them contribute to that money that is going to Land Bank. Hore, out of all these Castillo, Mafisas, and all the grants, where do we get that money from? Because we don't want to find ourselves fighting Treasury and Treasury saying, it's us who's funding Land Bank, we have no jurisdiction over Land Bank. Whereas it is our money that's supposed to be at the provinces, and provinces had agreed, or let's congregate this to help our commercial farmers in Land Bank. Thanks.
Honorable Marshall.
Honorable Chairperson, let me take this opportunity and greet you and greet my colleagues, including our officials, and also appreciate the presentation that has already been made. Honorable Chair, some of my inputs, my honorable member here, I think it's because she's next to me. Maybe, she, I don't know how she copied in my mind, you know. I feel that I have to move from here to the another place. But nevertheless, let me say that when it comes to the first presentation, I'm going to support on what my leader was talking about now, in most of the cases, and especially on the first page that she mentioned, those are the most important issues that I was looking at. But let's go to page number 5. There is a point there which talks about the failure to replace the ACB with a smaller type of institution with a specific mandate to assist the African smallholder farmers. I just wanted to understand. I just wanted to understand really what is going to happen in that. Because it shows me that somehow the production of some of those people that were supposed to be supported is not being realized. But also I wanted to check on the issue of the marketing environment. On the same slide, they are talking about also change to the marketing environment which had to be. I'm not definitely sure about this issue of marketing environment, because when we go out there, I want the department to clarify me. When we go out there, we look at those small farmers that we visited, or some of those projects that we visited, we've realized that these people, they can't even manage to get into the market as much as the department might be having systems in place to assist those farmers to get into the market. The market of which, according to my thinking, my knowledge or my opinion, is that we realize that it seems like as if there is a lack of, in the small farmers that we have visited, especially in KwaZulu-Natal, where we visited, we realize that there was a lack of sort of marketing tool, like, as the department, they support those farmers. It seems like as if those people, they don't know how to get into those areas of marketing, because they don't have marketing tools in place, they don't have policy and procedures to can be able to implement that. And then the other issue is that on page 7, under CAPS, your objectives, the first objectives that we talked about, the rural economy at the end, to create the on-farm for the rural economies, I think it's important for the department to make sure that we have people that we call,
what was the chair that over using go high salary
you know, the office, that there are certain officers that need to be given a support. I just forget the names of those people, what do you call them, but we use the extension officers, yes. I want to talk about the extension officers. That for us to make sure that we create the livelihood of the farmers at the grassroots level, why don't we make sure that in these objectives that we have, to capacitate those people, they do like they did before. In those years, the department was doing well with those people to assist those people to the higher level, of which I think the best thing for us is to make sure that we capacitate them so that they can be able to assist these objectives of ours, which I think it can work in the rural areas if it is there. Then the last one, Chairperson, on this presentation will be on page 9. On page 9, we are talking about it is still also under the pillars of CASP. We are saying here that we are talking about knowledge and information management. And they're saying this program has delivered on 6 priorities. Those pillars are going to be assisting us. So I just wanted to know from the department, what do you mean when you say knowledge and information management, by who? And I'm also going back to technical and advisory services. As I said, let's capacitate those officials so that they can help those people at grassroots level. The training and capacity building. I think, yes, I agree with you as the department to say that you are reviving our colleges that were there before, which I think if the training can take place, our people will be able to be capacitated. With regard to the marketing and business development support, we are suggesting that the department should use the issue of intergovernmental relations with regard to this one, this pillar, in making sure that you bring in the Department of Small Businesses, you guys to help one another to make sure that our farmers at the grassroots level, they get registration with SABS so that they can be able to enter in the stream market of the economy and also be able to produce the better produce to send to other places. But also in marketing and business development support, we are saying that the department should look into the issue of making sure that the quality management system and policy and procedures are produced for the smallholders so that they can be able to know how they go about their products. Financial services branded Mafisa, and this pillar. When we were in KwaZulu-Natal, we went to another place where we found where there was a certain amount of money used for disaster management relief, of which somehow our department did not be able to can give us the correct information. It was like people didn't know where money went when we asked them what happened with this money for disaster during that time. So we are suggesting that as much as we talk about financial services, maybe the department can expand a little bit so that we can be able to understand what is going on there with that issue. We are happy that there will be on the same page 9. We are happy that the department is talking about focus on land reform. We are happy that the department are going to be together, the rural development and agriculture. We think that as you develop your strategies, you will give new entrance and access value to chain market, which I think is going to be something that is going to assist us as the department. But I'm saying, as we develop these strategies, the national department must be able to use the intergovernmental relations to take on the provincial departments. We should not leave them out and say, these people, when we give them money, when you have to go and talk to them, they say to you, no, no, this is us, this is the district, this is the local government. And I know that we've got 3 spheres of government, but I think that as a national department, we know where to be able to track those people at the end of this so that we can be able to be accountable to our people. Chairperson, I thank you very much. I think on this page I'm done. And then the last one is this one that was presented. I think most of the things, as I said, my colleague has already spoken about those. I'm not going to go much on it. I'm just going to stress the issue of monitoring and evaluation on farmer support, as much as they started this thing of financing our farmers. But we think the small farmers need to be taken into consideration, because if you give them something and at the end of the day you don't go into monitoring and evaluation, and they will fall down and we'll all have projects and cooperatives that are not sustainable as time goes on. I think I don't have many things to talk about this slide, because my leader have already spoken about it. It's so nice. Thank you.
Honorable Masad. Thank you. Honorable Kappa.
Thank you, Chair. Mine will be just very easy ones and vague to some extent. But let me start with the one of, there's somewhere where there was a mention of community gardens. I think it's something community gardens. My interest in this one is that at some stage I was convinced that community gardens had failed. And on that, I was also linking with our argument that in development, there is nothing we call community. That's a slogan, acceptable slogan for acceptability. There is nothing that you can say is a community you develop, because when you develop people, they should always be a category. They can be youth, they can be women. But if you say community, to me, it has never worked. It has never worked. There's nothing like that in development. Unless you tell me good umdos of December Velekhautin, Abe party decision means go July. And you always have those problems in community. So I would like to understand now where these successful ones as community gardens, has that changed the situation that they can, in their instances where community garden can work with communities without the category being changed. Now when you support the commercial farmers, I'm interested in understanding how long are they supported? Is it continuous or is determined by something? That one is also linked to the one of being able to support subsistence farmers, commercial farmers, smallholders by the same fund. How does this work? Is there no way that it is determined that so-and-so can only support commercial farmers? Does there not become any discrepancy that maybe some others are ignored at the expense of others, are supported at the expense of others? I'm worried about that part of all these categories that we supported in the same fund of MAFISA. Has MAFISA proved to be an acceptable and successful program? I would like to get that one. I know it can simply disappear, that question, in the answers, but I would like now to know that is MAFISA has proved to be an acceptable and successful program in achieving all these things I'm mentioning. Taking me also to that part of, that's some clarity on the part of job creation. Just a clarity that how giving loans contributes to job creation. Give loans to these people and then some jobs are being created. Maybe it's a simple one, maybe. But I need some clarity. And also some concrete evidence that this process has improved and increased access to finance, that being a major objective. Because I'm worried if things, because the objective is real, we'll continue saying it, and someone said to me there's a difference between an experience of 10 years and an experience of 1 year repeated for 10 years. Why I highlight this is because if that experience you have been doing for 10 years, after every cycle, there's no time when you say we have done this, we've gone through this, we failed here, therefore we changed this. It doesn't seem here that in all these years there's something that has been discovered to be improved and so on. It's just too normal. That worries me. It seems then it takes me that it's an experience that is being repeated normally, and that there's nothing that becomes challenges that makes us to need to change. Because at the end of the day, I would like want to say, because of its experience, it has proved that this we are supposed to change. This is not working. That is my concern. This is why then I need some evidence of these successes. Do we have any programs now which somehow we have identified in what was rural development and land reform, which we found that they are a category that can be taken and be included in the programs that we have? Because I'm also worried about our speed of transforming and working in the current situation. Let me leave it there for now, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Montwedi.
Here's one I'm missing, Chair.
Honorable Montwedi.
Excuse me, sir. There's one I'm missing.
Honorable Montwedi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, everybody. And apologies for arriving a bit late, Chair. Chair, I think on the first presentation, I picked up that there's 15% of the budget that you had advocated that it must support. I think it's that black commercialization of black farmers. Now, the last time we were in this boardroom with the department, we told that I'm not sure if there was a review of the concept document of the program on revitalization. I'm not sure if is it still not yet out, or is it ready so that we can actually be able to look into that strategy on how to go about commercializing black farmers. If it is there, I think it should be shared so that we actually get to check what is contained in there, and if one is allowed to can even be able to make any other contributions. The other thing that you said under CASP is to revitalize agricultural colleges. I am not sure what you mean. Well, I agree that agricultural colleges must be revitalized, but what the revitalization program, what does it entail? Will it going to make provision for farmers, for agricultural colleges to be able to give short courses to farmers that are relevant in whatever that farmers are doing, both in crop and livestock production? Will it actually be able to do that? Because currently, I know Taung Agricultural College, where I'm coming from, it does not do that at all. I think those are the two issues that I wanted to raise under the first presentation. The second presentation, Chair, is on Mafisa. I've got many things that I want to raise there. You said intermediaries, you said the interest on loan is 7%. And the intermediaries get to keep those 7%. But I can tell you from where I am that on paper you'll say it's 7%. These intermediaries that you're talking about, there's one Honorable Kapa led by former MK. What do you call yourself? Commissars, former MK commissars. Peolwana. to be specific, they do not lend money directly to farmers. There are other smallanyana intermediaries that they use in order for them to lend money to farmers. Now, somewhere in between there, it may be that Elon enters into an agreement with a certain, like for example, let me be specific. There's what is called Leading Edge. Leading Edge loans money from Beolwane. And Leading Edge goes and supports farmers on the ground. The interest that farmers pay, it's way more than 7%. And yet, it means somebody owns, lends money at 7%, goes and lends out of that money at 15-20%. It's not only Beolwane, because most of these intermediaries check. They are not on the ground. They also have other wings and wings. The next thing, money from a farmer, it works around 30%. And yet you are saying you are at 7%. That is not true. What is the monitoring that you have put in place to ensure that these intermediaries must loan money directly to farmers, not to smaller intermediaries, and smaller intermediaries put an interest. And the person who must benefit from this ends up paying 30 or 35%, whereas you are saying 7%. What monitoring do you have in place, say, on that issue? Now, the other issue is on the balances that I think they are on page 17 and page 18 to say. That page speak to balances that were there with these intermediaries as at 31st of March 2019. and yet you, as the person who disperses money to these people, you don't have any money. What is it that happens? Did you put that money, are they spending as per your own government financial year, or they can have your multi-year arrangement? In terms of you give them money in a certain financial year, they take 3 to 2 to 3 years. Well, the money is still there, not dispersed. Is there a way that you agree with them and say, this money must be spent on this particular year, and if the money is not spent and dispersed to intermediaries, what do you do about that? Because I can tell you, my brother, they are not on the ground, these intermediaries. They are not there. You go to an agricultural office, they won't even tell you of these many intermediaries that they're talking about. They will never. Now, this program would have been best if your extension officers, your agricultural offices, locally knows that there is a service of a loan that a farmer can access to plant. And I'm more worried, as Honorable Sabe said earlier, that you are more focused on very small, small, small 4 hectare. What is a 4 hectare? A farmer will not even make anything out of a 4 hectare. There was a study done that farmers can't even live on a 10 hectare in a season, that it is very small. And Igari, your focus is not, we must strive towards commercializing black people. We must strive towards making sure that these black farmers, you support them sufficiently. But if you support a person on a 4 hectare, on maize, a maize that is about not more than 2.2 per ton, and you are supporting on a 4 hectare, expecting him per hectare to get 7 tons, 7 or 8 tons per hectare. That is no money. And the person must still pay 7%. So please look into, or maybe you are on a small scale, land bank is on a large scale. If that is the case, we may as well cut this small scale and review the Mafisa police and focus on land bank chair. Because at least there will be assist farmers on more than 4 hectares. But if you can increase in terms of how you do that, I think it will actually assist farmers. So I think, lastly, Chair, on the issue of the insurance, I think you're saying you're still working around that issue of the insurance, if I heard you correctly. I'm not sure, Chair, because if you can do that, it would really assist farmers. Because some of these insurance companies that do insure farmers' crops, they are just ripping farmers apart. your farm get banned at one point, they come and assess, they'll not even give you anything. So maybe if we can go move along those lines, it may even be your primary focus, because all of these things that we're doing, they are not assisting farmers. But with that, Chair, I think I managed to cover everything. But when the DG was acting DG was speaking earlier, I did not actually get what you were saying quite clearly. But I think, as you're saying, that you have moved Mafisa to be his chief director, or I'm not here, so that maybe you want to direct programs of Mafisa. It may work out better in future than they were. But from where we are coming from, Mafisa was just not doing enough. But if that is the vision in terms of changing it, I think we need, farmers need fund loans, Chair. Mazondo will give them grants, because they became dependent on this grant. They don't know that this is a business that they must run. So you give them a Mafisa loan at 7% or at 6%, it is something that farmers need. So we must never do away with it, because we're going to do the dependency syndrome, where farmers must depend on grants funding their own production. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Ndavezi, Honorable Kwebekulu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't think I have much to raise, but it's only the concern that I have, Chair. If one looks at the presentation, it involves the subsistence farmers, smallholder, and commercial farmers. But if one looks at the figures that are given, it shows a number of farmers that have been assisted, but there's nowhere on the report that says out of this number we had so much that we are successfully assisted, and this is the number of people that could not be assisted or have their lives improved when it comes to the assistance, as well as the provision of the mechanization. One would maybe ask if has the department, national department, has ever visited those farms where they've sort of delivered the mechanization for the assent of those farmers, to see exactly whether are they operational or are they being used in improving the lives of those farmers, or they're just standing in the farms without being used. Because one would say, Chairperson, it's very important for the department not to come with the figures every now and then to say they've done this to so many, but when you go to the ground, you can't find those things happening exactly, Chairperson. And my other worry, Chairperson, or my concern is around the substance small livestock smallholders, if I could call it. When I raised a question when we were in Richards Bay regarding the assistance of the livestock owners, the answer was that it's only the cooperative that are assisted by the department. But whereas here we get told that even the subsistence livestock owners are assisted. Chair, it's a worrying factor, simply because you know, with the very few head of cattle some people have, they use, they sell them in order to finance their kids at universities. How then, if the department says pushes aside the assistance of the communal livestock owners and only focus on the cooperatives? Because that as well, we are sort of leaving aside the people to continuously suffer. We have the challenge of diseases as have been stated here, but nothing is being mentioned of the lumpy skin diseases, which affects most of the livestock owners, more especially the communal livestock owners in rural areas, where you find that you can't even find the vets who come and assist those people out there, and the livestock then sort of perishes out of those diseases. The concern is just around that, Chairperson. I wish maybe one day the department, national department, will go out and see for themselves whether the money spent in all the projects can be accounted for productively, rather than saying we've spent so much and that's it. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Sibande. Honorable Sindane.
Agnanginga. Thank you, Chair. The mine is just two questions and one short comment. Page 34 and 35 on CAS. One is around the proportion of youth supported. The percentage is worrisome. Maybe the question should be why are we still sitting at 14%? But equally should also extend it as to how many, or in terms of percentage, are women supported through all these initiatives or efforts. And the second one, I'm asking this question, having read the way forward in terms of the issue that I'm going to raise as to why is it still the case? repeated audit findings. Given the fact that this is not the first time it was highlighted, why is it still here? What measures are we putting in place to ensure that these projects that are funded are properly monitored and where money is put, there is proper accountability and there is for money? But lastly, I don't think it's still fair for us to be discussing ways of how to get support for small-scale farmers in terms of accessing market. There should be already market available for these farmers. We have almost in all provinces a prison in this country. We have hospitals. We have a lot of government institutions, which there should be a deliberate attempt by government to ensure that every institution, public, supports these small-scale farmers. There's a deliberate attempt that food that is produced locally. There is a clear government policy that directs that a certain portion should be directly sourced from these local farmers. So there should be a deliberate attempt by government to ensure that before we look outside markets, here at home, there is already support that is ready available, and then our people don't struggle. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Sindane. Honorable Mbabama.
Ngosi Chairperson. On page 7, under on the economic front, the second bullet, the second and the third bullet.
Presentation?
Sorry, in the CASP presentation. It talks here about as the positive impacts of CASP on the agricultural sector gain momentum, there will be significant amounts of domestic and foreign investment which will be attracted to complement the initial capital injections through the program. And they carry on to say that this will lead to the reversal of inequities in farmland access. Now, it's been 15 years since we've had this program. I would just like the department to tell me whether this has happened at all. And if not, why not? Are they measuring this? Has this happened in terms of us getting those significant amounts of domestic and foreign investment through this particular program? We also talk on page 10, or the presentation talks on page 10 in terms of security of tenure and a focus on land reform. They'll find CASP is supposed to find combinations between opportunities. I'm not sure what exactly this means. Find creative combinations between opportunities. That is, support successful communal farms in terms of security of tenure. Could they just please explain what they mean here? What security of tenure is this? And then also I would like to agree with Honorable Mundwedi on page 13, revitalize agricultural colleges into centers of excellence. If they can just explain how they do this. And I see they say they've got 10 colleges under this program. Could they name the colleges and tell us exactly what they've done? Then the last question from me, Chair, is on page 21 on the same presentation. It's a page with a business plan. They are talking about experiential learning. I'd like to know if this is planned, documented, and monitored? And if so, can we please be supplied with a sample of that plan that they have for these, I don't know if I'm on the right page, I think it's page 20. Of the three-year program of experiential learning for these young people. I'd like to get a sample of the plan. Thank you, Chair.
The Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to start by saying that I'm very concerned with the way the numbers are thrown around. I think they're a little bit confusing. I would probably, you know, ask that in the future, you know, the numbers could be just, you know, clear and consistent as they report around the numbers. I just want to touch first on page 9. We talk about technical and advisory on the CASP, technical and advisory services. And on the CASP, in terms of the technical advisory and advisory services, page 16, there's an indication of the number of extension personnel provided with resources, which is about 3,268, an additional number which is 144. However, this number does not really tell us what is the number of the extension officer, the total number of extension officers. Maybe they should just explain to us what is the number of the extension officer in the whole country that are allocated to support these programs. That's on the CASP. But on the Letsema, which obviously, you know, has got its own activities, there are no number of extension officers that are reported. So I would like to know how many extension officers are allocated to Letsema in order to achieve this particular target. The other concern that I'm having is that there is an amount that was allocated, which is about 1.5 billion. However, the expenditure is about 1.8. I think the big question for me is that obviously the issue that I pick up from the visit of the KZN is that projects are not delivered fully. There are some issues, there are some concerns with the maladministration or the money being not spent properly. So I want to know how much of this project or this project funding has gone into some corrupt element or activities, if the department knows, you know, that they can in the future to highlight this and report to this committee, because I think it's crucial that we know how much of this money that was allocated and spent was gone gone into the corrupt activities and so forth, or was not spent properly. So those are my concerns, but I would really like that in the future that these numbers could be succinct, especially you talk about how many extension officers, I think about 3,000 extension officers, and also you talk about 23,000 jobs created. So which means if you break that down, you'll find that you will probably be creating 7,000 jobs per extension officer. Is that what the target you have as a department, that each extension officer should provide us with 7 additional job or 33 additional job? So I think that the numbers should tell us a story so that we are able to manage and to support you and to guide you and also to really ask you questions regarding the programs that you are running. On the Mafisa side, I've got really no question, but I think Mafisa is not really supporting or is not really giving us the outcome that we are looking for. I'll definitely really request that we relook the Mafisa and basically, you know, to say, is this really the way that we need to support the, you know, call it the garden producers and the smallholder producers? Shouldn't we look at something else in order to really try and support those producers that are in the rural and in the small areas, small towns? Thanks very much, Chair.
Honorable Priyat.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try and be quick. I see we are we have been quite lengthy, and most of my colleagues have actually assisted most of the questions. Maybe just speaking to page 8 of the first presentation of CASP, which also mentioned, and I would like to add on to what Honourable Mbabane said, the first bullet says in terms of social benefits, and you've read it, it adds and it assists poverty reduction, improves rural living standards, reduces crime and violence, etc. Do you really think, taking that into account and also taking into account what we've seen in KZN, and I come from the Free State, so I know what's happening there, do you really think CASP has been working and has added to the socioeconomic circumstances of these farmers that you have assisted to CASP? Because I'm not seeing it on the ground. Then also adding and speaking to, as Honourable Slape has, to page 11, which is our policy imperatives, it is worrying to me that we set standards, yet we seem to fail and we always seem to fall short of what we are achieving. Then being on page, and I'm trying to sum up as I go, page 16, we are talking of the number of farmers trained and also the number of farmers mentored. How do we monitor the success of our mentors that we are there, and what is the set goal? Is there a clear-cut goal? Honourable Montwede has also spoken about that and said that we don't see them working. They get 15,000 rand a month, and I'm not clear as to what they are supposed to be mentoring and how you as a department may monitor their mentorship. Also, speaking to the farmers trained, one of our farmers last week mentioned that one of a co-op gets trained, and then that farmer has to teach the rest of the farmers within the co-op. How does is that 27,000 farmers, is that all of the farmers you've trained, or is that the farmers that have been, you know, worked down, the one farmer in a co-op having trained all the others? Is that what it is? And then, sorry, Chair, just to go back to page 10, I saw the mention of agro-processing and how CASP fits into the NDP. My worry is, and you say agro-processing will create jobs and grow the rural economy. Once again, I am from the Free State, and I think I said it in our first meeting, is I don't actually see our agro-processing working in our provinces. Are you prioritizing that, seeing as it is part of NDP's vision, or what is our plan in terms of that? And also, just to add on page 13 of the colleges, what money is being allocated to the revitalization of these agricultural colleges? And maybe just a breakdown to add on to Honourable Mbabana's, to say what amount per college. Then very quickly, Chair, adding to Mafisa, you mentioned here the number of beneficiaries reached, the number of beneficiaries actually paying back the intermediaries. What is the time period that beneficiaries need to pay back the money to the intermediaries? And what is there a time frame the intermediaries have to pay you back? Because, I mean, if I understand Mafisa correctly. My fears also, and maybe just to ask, do I understand Mafisa correctly, as we are assisting the smallholder farmers, so it is actually supposed to be the new model instead of the ACB, which we have done away with? Is that the idea of Mafisa? And my last, Chairperson, I am very afraid, if you look at page 51, which is the very last page of Mafisa, the second to last bullet, it says Mafisa model can be used as the base for developing and improving finance models. Now, my fear is specifically taking into account page 40 of that exact same presentation, which says... It's page 40 where it says Mafisa funds are depleted and we need to refinance it. And we've seen in one of the previous slides as well that your beneficiaries and your intermediaries are not paying that back, and we don't have money to actually do more Mafisa projects. So do you think this is a working model then, in terms of all of the facts that you have laid out on the table? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Steyn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Many of the questions have already been asked. I will start with the presentation on CASP and the other slide 11 that speaks about the policy investment and the outcomes. And I would add that I think, Chair, it's time that we get a proper How far are we? Someone asked for that. This NDP was developed in 2012 or accepted, and since then this has been the department's outcomes that we want to achieve, but we have no idea where we are. How do we measure it? Do we have a way of measuring it, or do we just put it in here and come back and report, you know, month after month, quarter after quarter? How do we measure it? So if the department maybe can just inform me on how do they measure it? How do they themselves seeing this being measured? Because I don't see it in reports every year. Chairperson, then I would like to go to the next slide, the one on 12. That speaks about the allocation since inception. Again, the total of 12.7 billion, maybe my calculations is not correct, but it doesn't add up. If you add up the years, that is already worrisome to me. And then the one above that, 2018-19, the allocations for cost, maybe I don't understand this, but worry me if I don't understand things that we get as presentations, Chair. It says cost allocation 1.7 billion, expenditure 1.8, but percentage spending is 90%. So maybe it's supposed to be the other way around, or maybe I don't understand how it's being recorded or how we get it, because I would have thought if it's 90%, you would have spent less than what you were allocated, but maybe the way it works is another way around. That's maybe why I can't calculate these amounts, Chair. And can I ask, Chairperson, on this slide that we have received, the next slides tell me nothing. To say so many farmers, so many projects, for what amount of cost goes to farmers? What amount goes to small farmers? How many small farmers? Where are they? And it brings me to, I think, I would almost say Honourable Elder, in her admittance, basically, saying that she can't vouch for the numbers of... That's been my concern all along, Chair. We have a project on the books, and we keep it on the books, and no one checks if it's a reoccurring thing, is it not happening, is the money actually there, is the money not there. I think the examples that we saw this week, Chairperson, was a rude awakening, hopefully also to the department. Chair, I would almost say that in future, when we get a presentation to say 6,020 farmers were supported under this, we get a list of names. Where are they? They're not there. And I will put my head on the block. Because, Chairperson, if we don't start fighting for this, we will keep on getting these reports that's actually saying nothing. So I would ask the department that we get a full report. Since inception of CAST and Lima Letsema, how many small farmers did you assist? What was the budget for that? How many, whatever these categories of farmers are? And then on that, how do we classify them? When are you a small farmer, and when are you a subsistence farmer, and when are you a what farmer, whatever farmer you are? Who decides that? And I would go further, Chairperson, to say that what kind of expertise does the departmental officials have to decide on what funding will a farmer get? If they submit business plans, who checks it? Is it feasible? Is it not? How do you decide this one gets 2 million, that one gets nothing? That one gets 500,000, that one gets 10 rand? Or whatever the case is. Who decides that? And what is the expertise of the panel that sits there and decides that? Someone mentioned last week, Chair, while we were traveling, we think the department has a basket and they throw it in the air. The ones that, applications that fall, this one gets that, that applications that get, so I don't know how the department decides these things. What is the criteria? And once the money has been spent, Chairperson, again, what monitoring is happening? And Chair, I don't want to have an answer by saying we don't have a capacity. I want to mention this again, the DG knows. Last year I said to them, I could see that the department has spent on one project 1.4 million rand for 1 kilometer of fencing. And it's easy just to sit there and look at the numbers. So if we don't have that capacity within the department, and we talk about billions of rand that get spent on projects, there's something seriously wrong. Seriously wrong. Because the impact on the ground and the questions that was asked, and I would like to get that report, Chairperson, on slide 12, in blue on top there, next to allocation since inception, there's a word that says, or a paragraph, the impact study on cost for a period 2007-08 to 11-12 was conducted by DAF and Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in 2014-15. I would like to see that report. What was the impact? How was it measured? It comes back to my first question. How do we measure the impact on the ground? Do we have a way to do it? Because if we don't, Chairperson, we're basically wasting everyone's time here. Then, Chairperson, can someone tell me the foot and mouth fence in KZN? Who has last checked that fence? I was told last week in KZN it's in place, it's been there. I'm told reliably that it's not maintained. It's falling apart. So who from the department has last checked that fence? Then, Chairperson, RECAP funding. How far are we on the department to splitting these things? We haven't seen RECAP funding. Are we now one department? Are we not? Are we going to get a separate thing on RECAP funding? Because this we are talking about COSP and the Limalesima. Where's RECAP? What has happened to it? What is currently funding farmers? If RECAP has fallen away, does it fall under COSP now on Ilima? Or where does it fall? So, Chairperson, lastly, on this thing of allocation of since inception, I would like to see COSP, RECAP, Mafisa, all these other things, Kuyana Fosu, whatever funds was given by this department per year, per province. Because we are spending money and we don't see the impact. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. In the interest of time, we've got 45 minutes before we conclude, which I think we should look into the two remaining presentations, because if we are to get proper answers, we should be able to dedicate the remaining time to the answers that are being provided, and request that these two presentations be slotted in the next session that we can be able to have. Is that all right with the honorable members? Thank you. With that said, I would want to just maybe put two questions or requests in terms of the 86 farmers that have received the SA GAP certification, of which the majority, that being 54, of whom are from the Northern Cape, how many have sustained access to the markets as a result of the department's intervention? And may we also, DG, request that the department provide all the impact evaluation reports that were commissioned by DPME for DAF and also for rural development and land reform support programs. Thank you. We'll hand over to the department for answers. And honorable members, if we still have time at the end, we may take a second bite, but we'll just see as to what the time informs us. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable chair. Honorable chair, you want us to respond, or you want us to respond quickly, then get into the answer, to get into the presentations? you really think us to do which one?
You may respond to all the issues raised, DJ.
Okay. Also, thank you, sir. Thank you for that clarity. It's quite a huge amount of work, Chair, that comes to one thing, that the returns are not visible. And Chair, we may try to put everything to its context and explain why. And I don't think that's what we're here for. The unfortunate thing, Chair, is that when we deal with this particular presentation, we confronted with what we thought could be a progress year-to-date presentation that we prepared somewhere, hoping that we'll talk about how far we are on projects and what the impacts are. That report usually is a report that is a standalone. So when questions relating to performance year-to-date and the impacts, we would like to engage in that particular presentation. Not necessarily that the comments are not right, but it then says we now know the 1 million underutilized land for irrigation, we have done so much. The figures are there. Most of the figures here that get reported to this committee are, in all honesty and truth, coming from the AG. The AG that goes there and says, this is right, this is not right, we've allocated that, we've evaluated that, that's the level we have taken this up. Because our state was always, the province will give us this, then they say let's update, and then we're confused. Now, whatever is there, it's honorable members, is validated. Which means they have gone to the place and found out, they have gone and found out that this is there, they have got those legs when they do that. They may not do it extensively, Chair.
I'm sorry, teacher.
Okay.
Who asked this question? Wait, Honorable Tappe, I just want to understand what you are answering.
What I'm answering, Chair, is on...
Who asked the question?
It was Honorable Tappe, who said, where is these developments, jobs that are permanent, non-permanent, 1 million unutilized land under production, progress on year-to-date performance, do we review targets or just stall them? So those were the questions that I was trying to respond to. To say the background to them is that they are almost... ones that are saying, please give us a presentation on performance year to date and the indicators that were there based on your APPs of last year. And then out of that, it is our humble proposition. Out of that then emerges these gaps. And then we are able to say we understand this one we do not understand. So that we can execute moving from there. So I was answering specifically the questions relating to performance that we usually do a separate presentation. If that route was not right, correct, so my humble apologies. But the question in performance is here. So I was relating to it. Yes. We fully agree that when we looked at the Mafisa Chair, it does need to be reviewed. Mafisa was based on a long story, and when it originated, it simply was saying we will give farmers better returns and at better rates of the cost of borrowing, which was 4% and 7%, and then allow these intermediaries to get the differential between 7 and 4. Mm. But we believe that if its market was simply to say this cannot afford in the land bank, but you can use so much just to get in this particular market.
Sorry, DJ, we have a difficulty with your input that you're making, because my understanding is that the AG looks into financial competence, not service delivery. And I think Honorable Tappe wants to also make an input, but I don't come to understand as to the work of the department and the service delivery that you are rendering, how AG can now be responsible for the figures in terms of your service delivery. What they are responsible for is compliance, whether the department is complying to...
With due respect, Chair, they do look at performance indicators. They do, sir. And that's one of our findings on biosecurity, for example, biological assets, was purely known numbers. It was an update on performance.
Okay. Honorable Tava.
Thanks, Chair, and sorry for interjecting. It's not in my nature. I would allow the speaker to present and whatever. Chair, my question, in simple terms, sometimes when you speak, we not become clear. We're talking about specifics. And the request, Chair, probably I should have said, DG could have just said on these issues that they have tabled policy imperative, make a table. 1 million jobs by 2019. How far are we? 20 months now. 2019 today. What we having for an example on slide 17 is a CASP. Total jobs indicated across all provinces is 7,156. When you go to slide 29, Ilima Letsema, jobs created 23,038. If you add this and this, is this the only jobs or are we talking only for this financial year? Now, our question is, how far are we at 2019? Because if you bring all those policy imperatives and make tables to say, for this financial year, we are at this level, then it becomes clearer for us. That was the question, not that you must bring another presentation that could be a standalone. So I was just asking on that to say, if you have planted 1,000 hectares, how far are we for now? You should have just made a table to say, but this is where we are. We wouldn't want an extra presentation out of that. That is the main thing.
Thank you.
Where the details are such that how much time do you give me to do this thing? Well, the questions are quite detailed. Some of them I'm missing, and I'm thinking of them differently, and that's why I like the guidance.
We have 36 minutes remaining, teacher.
I'm on. Thank
for
you,
all
sir.
The questions to be answered.
And my colleagues will take most of these questions while they are implementing, but I'll just say on the top of this is our relation, and it's important to mention the structure to strategy. Is generally on the questions of how we monitor, for example, generally speaking, is the relationship we have between ourselves and the provinces. The extent to which they understand what they should do and ours getting in that space and trying to do things. We are trying to break those silos. Those silos have actually affected the performance between us and provinces. Now we also inside have those silos within the department itself, where somebody else thought I can do more as a performance evaluator and monitor than that one. And this is sitting with me. And that held Casper Grandson until we had to break it at the risk of being taken to commissions of arbitration or be put in newspapers that were hating people. Because they always believe that this is their position and this is what they do. And that delayed us a little bit until when we arrived, we then said, we are going to change cars. The monitors have been appointed now. We have appointed the monitors on the 1st of September. They are starting to work. We are going to disperse some of the 1,000 graduates per commodity and disperse them at the level, at the ground level to assist them while they are within those commodities. So we are strengthening the area of monitoring more than we have done before. I think on other items, Chair, relating to UCASP in particular, I will leave it to the specialists, the people who are dealing with this together with the provinces and those who are presenting and the revitalization of colleges and the issues relating to gender in terms of what we claim to have achieved, we have done, assisting stocks and not assisting, there's nothing called assisting communal livestock farmers, as opposed to focusing on cooperatives. I think we'll deal with those questions because they are significant for individual growth in those areas. But I will take it to the CASP people, Elder, to quickly run on the issues surrounding CASP.
Thank you, TJ. On questions that were coming from Honorable Kape, the progress with regards to slide 11, I'm noting the request. We actually thought about it that is one area which we have omitted to add, but this would be additional information that we are going to be giving to the honourable members regarding the progress with regard to all these policy imperatives. Just to add is that CASP and Dilima Lizima are just but additional programs that are adding to the achievement of the 1 million target. So the 1 million job opportunities within the sector is seen as a sector achievement more than an achievement which could be received from the conditional grant. So the question was, how do we measure? The Statistics SA on an annual basis is seen as an independent evaluator who then is able to tell us whether we have succeeded in achieving those jobs towards the NDP target now. But from our program point of view, we are also tracking achievement against the business plan and say, for now, you would see there's a target of 7,000 jobs. Have we achieved those jobs against those projects that have been delivered? So we will be able to give progress around how far have we moved since 2014 to achieving the million hectares. Regarding, in case we see we are not going to achieve, yes, we knew that we were not going to achieve an increase of 1.5 million hectares for an argument's sake on irrigated land by 500,000 hectares, and the team experts in water use have really tried to engage with the presidency, monitoring and planning to review that target. So I'm of the view that that target would also be changed in the MTSF, which is the new MTSF target. But whether when we pick it up that it is not likely to be achieved, that we have the right to change it, we have seen that you can note that it's not likely, that we have no ability to change that target within the MTSF, that it has been approved. And maybe this is something that needs to be taken up, because we are continuing breaching something that we know would not likely be achieved. In terms of food security, how far are we? In 2014-15 financial year when we started, there were about 14.6 million household individuals who were found to be food insecure. Again, our measure is a general household survey, and we are now entering in a process, because what we have seen is that the SA vulnerable household general household survey is only giving us an indication of per province. So it's not telling us the figures in Northwest. If you were number 5 and now, or number 9, now you are number 6. And we had municipalities which were noted as vulnerable, but it does not tell you in terms of targeted response where exactly is your burden. And understanding that we have limited resources, we are now together with SADC embarking on a South African Vulnerability Assessment Survey, which is now going deeper in telling us within this space these are the actual households, so that we move faster in addressing food insecurity. We have seen improvement. The target was 14.6 million when we started in 2014. In 2018-19 financial year, general household survey is indicating that we are sitting at 13.7 million individuals. A million is something, but if you look at the numbers, it's still very high, because 13 million is still a lot of vulnerable households that are going to bed hungry. Training of farmers. We have a thorough process which has been outlined in our framework on what training needs to happen, and to a large extent, and I think this is where the rubber hits the tire, is that we are expecting provinces on the identified beneficiaries to be supported, that they do a thorough skills audit, which will then determine the gaps in terms of skills gap, and therefore a training program is then planned to address those skills gaps. The internal audit was sent throughout to the provinces, and we found that there's actually a disjuncture there. They would plan a training, have given a process in terms of the skills audit, But when you go back and follow through, you find out that it's actually not done to the latter. So there's still a need of follow through again that we still need to do. The framework is there. We know what needs to be done. Is the how is done on the ground where we are still getting disappointed. But we believe that the modus operandi which the training experts have already set up, if everybody follows it to the latter, we'll be able to close the gap that have been identified and should be on the basis of the production that the farmer is engaged in at that point in time. Our mentoring, we are merging as two departments and we had different ways of mentoring. From our side, our mentoring is strictly with community organizations and we expect that to be their contribution to a large extent. And only where there are gaps exist regarding the amount of levies that they have, which could not reach the number of farmers that we have accepted to support, that we only add on to their support. So we don't necessarily have a 15,000 standard, which you heard is a standard which the mentors from the colleagues who benefited from rural development were happening. So there is a need to synchronize and make sure that our approach is the same, which would be part of the integrated model. But we use experts who are industry to be able to mentor and support the farmers from our conditional grants. And as a result, from what we know, when you complete from a college or a university, you don't necessarily know much about what goes on real life on a farm, so you are not likely to be a mentor. You yourself need now to put your practice into reality, and in many instances what you've been taught in class is different from the practical example. Hence, there's a need to expose these unemployed graduates to real-life experience such that when they merge their practice with what they have seen on the ground, then they become improved, either scientists or farmers also. So our program for mentoring or for placing young graduates, we will be able to share with the honorable members as they have requested in terms of the detail of what it entails, the framework and the guiding tools are in place on what training they need and what support they need. Where do we get the money for blended funding? Honorable members are correct. 15% of CASP was agreed because in all what we have done, we have realized that there are already some farmers who are actually ready to access funding, and the banks were saying many of them we are not able to finance because they don't have a strong balance sheet now, and for all reasons that you know, they don't necessarily have enough collateral. So to move them away from the grant, we then agreed that we are going to take at least 15% of CASP to start up the blended funding program, and when it's proven that it is successful, National Treasury at the time, we were working with DM Buthelezi, he was also lobbying that additional funding should then be directed directly from National Treasury. And I'm trying to look at the slide. This is slide 30. It's showing you how much money of what the President has spoken to is coming here, but this is only the contribution from DAF, previous DAF. There's also in the agreement a contribution which was committed by rural development, hence the figures that the President spoke to on blended funding. Honorable Macho, the change of marketing environment, too, there's a lot of things that went on in that space, but if time allows, during the previous regime, there was a marketing board and it would buy everything from the farmer and it would be the one responsible to sell. So with the new democracy, with the globalization of the market and the restrictions that were put in place by the WTO, we couldn't do business as used to be done in the past, and individual farmers were now allowed or expected to market and compete individually, although we know that the competition is still not fair because your European countries, although they emphasize that you are not supposed to be supporting your farmers in this side, they are also still supporting their farmers and putting the success of their farmers a priority. So in our case, when the market price goes down and the farmer has set up a business plan using the price at that time and stuff happens and the price goes down, maybe there's oversupply in the market and all that, we do not say your bankability and viability was on the basis that we're going to get 5 rand per carrot. Now the carrot is 2 rand, therefore you are losing the 3 rand. And even after you have sold everything else, you have that 3 rand loss. And therefore, you are not viable. You are not bankable. You can't pay salaries, your operating capital. So we still have those issues. And that is what we talk about when we talk about the changing market environment. And it required that you then come in with other means to then support and facilitate access to market for these producers. So all this is known, and I think to a large extent, our marketing team is really trying to work hard with the provincial departments such that we understand what the market wants, and we position our farmers such that they're able then to supply those markets. You have other partners who would even come in with their own investment and assist the farmer that you're supporting to set up their pack house or whatever, such that they would then be able to take up. So there's a lot that will need time to explain really what happened during that time. And as a result, it is a conscious act that we need to undertake to make sure that our farmers are prepared to be able to access the market. Why do we not capacitate the extension officers to be able to assist these farmers? In our extension recovery plan, Mr. Msomi has already prepared an additional information. I think it would be safe to say let this be also taken up as an additional information to the committee just to save time. But we have tried with the funding that goes into ERP on CASP to train them, although some had said probably our training is also giving them qualification, and after they have received qualification, instead of continuing with extension, then they find greener pastures. So we need to find ways of how best do you strengthen their capacity beyond just the numbers, is their skill base. And of course, we are addressing issues around access to rural areas, cars, and the tools that we give them so that they are able to do their job. And maybe whilst I'm at this, there was a question whether the jobs are linked to the extension officers. Not necessarily. The jobs are coming from the business that we are supporting, or they are coming from activities like fencing, which would be those who then becomes your temporary jobs. But if we have a farmer who's producing on 5 hectares and we help him to produce on 20 hectares, by that action, you have now increased the area for production, therefore increasing opportunities for permanent jobs. And then we count also those jobs which resulted from the work. We are taking advice around strengthening intergovernmental relations. It's really something that we are doing very well, but not to the best of how we could be doing it. And there's really power in intergovernmental relations because all other services and support then get opened up to the farmer that we are supporting. Honorable Gebekulu, presentations show the numbers to be supported. How many have been supported? I think this would also come with the report that has been asked in terms of how much has been done since inception. And then let's move to Honorable Gapa. Around CASP, I've answered the 15%. This is now, how long do we support commercial farmers? Is there no way that others can benefit more? We have learned from all these interventions that at least the banks are willing to introduce your loan funding to any producer who is reaching at least a minimum of 500,000 per annum. Whilst also at the same time your MAFISA programs, which are your cheap loan programs, are able then to introduce producers, even if they are not yet at 500,000, to some additional funding of a loan for operating capital. So with the introduction of your blended funding, we would then better be in a position to know which class belongs where and what support should be. At this point in time, everybody has really just been supported based on the need on the farm at that point. The revitalization of agricultural colleges, we have taken that request, Honorable Montredi, and we will provide detail around what do we do. But with our conditional grant, we focus mainly on revitalizing infrastructure on these colleges. And then there's funding from the Chief Directorate training, which assists with content as well as skill for your lecturers as well. So the revitalization on CASP is really to set up the libraries, the training facilities, the sporting fields, your production areas, the piggeries, then, and so that the students can have facilities to practice. Why is the proportion of youth supported little? It's really been a challenge to attract young people in agriculture. But to a large extent, I think with our conditional grants, we only support those who are already on land. And in the true sense of the word is that young people don't necessarily have land. So if many can receive permission to occupy, we will be able to support them. As we are increasing also opportunities for young people to be on 3-year experiential learning, we believe that in future more will also be allocated land and more would then be able to benefit. Why is this still the case for repeated audit findings? I think it is largely on the basis of our capacity to monitor. We have over 1,500 projects running countrywide at the same time, and even if we were wanting to be in each and every one of them, we wouldn't. Our monitoring framework requires that the province must take responsibility because they are recipients of our money. We have the program managers at the province, we have the HOD, we have the MEC. Every project that has been implemented should have an extension officer, should have a project manager. So at any point where we are unable to reach, there should be a representative of government, which is the province, to be able to provide that adequate oversight. And as we have found out, this is where we are lacking. It's not fair to discuss market access. There should already be market, yes, indeed. Market, government market, we talk about it, but I think our biggest weakness is the ability to really facilitate that connectedness. But to a large extent, I think this would be improved through the production support centers, which the minister has forced that we need to make sure that they are on-site and they are operational, because that would be a point through which we would be able to enable access to market for our farmers. Many is due to the fact that they don't have storerooms, they don't have packing facilities, and so on. And even if the market is there, you can't then get the produce because the facilities that enable access to markets are not necessarily available for many of these farmers that we are supporting. And the funds allow you only to be on farm, and then you don't have enough to then bring in, which also talks to why we should partner. Honorable Mbabane, page 7, it's been 15 years since we have the program. Have we realized these economic benefits? The impact study, if I were to talk to the impact study, had shown that little impact has been achieved, but it had shown potential when it looked at certain cases that if things were done, first of all, we were found to be thin on the ground. We were spreading our resources too thinly, so as a result, that impact is not visible. But in spaces where we were able to consolidate our support within a region, visible impact was seen. And what then we meant was that immediately the government has then invested, the sector would be able to come and the industry would be able to come and additional investment will happen because opportunities would be seen. A case in point in this regional support is the Ngaham Academia 300 hectare, but for now we have done about 180 hectares of macadamia nuts, and you will see how it has attracted additional funding beyond what we have done. You'll see how it has improved the capacity of the individuals, and the additional benefit beyond just the grant. That is really what it meant. It becomes catalytic, our investment, and is able to then attract additional funding. Regarding the creative combination, I think what the NDP was saying is precisely what I'm talking about, to say there shouldn't be one size fits all to support, and I'm sure the colleagues from Land Reform would be able to share with the committee what additional creative combinations have been put in place to try and support these communal lands. I've spoken to colleges revitalization. The report will be made. Sample of 3-year program of the graduate. We will make that report, that plan also available. I have picked up when the honorable members were talking around these figures that probably in trying to squeeze everything on the funding slide, that I've left the most important side, which is rollover, because we'll see that what I reflected is the allocation, and then what is finally available for spending is more than what is allocation includes the rollover. So we'll be able to show you which provinces were the rollovers, and the actual expenditure would then be against the total which was available for spending in that particular financial year, not only on the allocation. So apologies for that confusion. Technical and advisory services, what is the total number of extension officers? Mr. Msomi, as the chief director responsible for extension officers services, has already done a report, but I'll give to him when I'm done to just respond to, maybe now, just respond to that question.
Thank you, TG. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The number of extension officers in the country is 2,685. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Msomi. The ILIMA extension officers, the programs happen on site, and an extension officer is responsible for the whole area. So the same that are mentioned and supported through CASP are empowered to be able to support beneficiaries of ILIMA LETSEMA. So I'm liking the question because it might mean that if you had put them separate and responsible for each program, you would see different ways. That's not how we measure it, but the same extension officers are supporting ILIMA LETSEMA beneficiaries. I've explained the figures on the billion and the jobs linked to extension. Do we really think CASP has achieved its social objectives? Again, we will make the impact study report visible. The findings show that we have really achieved little impact, and the reasons are also stipulated around your thin spread of resources. We have used it as a social grant, not necessarily as an economic fund, that as you would see with the projects that we have supported, that we have visited in KZN, you still need that, see that they have been supported, but we have not comprehensively supported them. Then we've moved on to the next one. So we've missed an opportunity of doing a final good job on this one and then jumped on to the other one. So those were some of the gaps that have been picked up. And to a large extent, this also has to do with interference. I call it political interference, where someone would say, no, this was supported yesterday, without really looking at the objective of why you were there and what you wanted to achieve at the end of the day. And then you need to move on to the next. And then the officials are obliged, but then the impact would then be realized, because you have not really met the objective of supporting this farmer. And that is not the only reason. I must quickly say that so that I don't get to excuse the failing officials as well. Yeah. Farmers trained and mentored, we have responded to that. Agro-processing.
Sorry, Chairperson, I'm slow. Can I just check? Did the honourable official just say projects are being monitored by politicians and interference? Is that what you said?
Honourable Chair, maybe I shouldn't, that is what I was saying, let me just correct that. When the decision is made to support a project without really looking at the total achievement of objectives, then there's an instruction to say, this farmer has been supported, now we need to move to the next farmer. And we then oblige, which probably in our view what we have also said to provinces is that we do not necessarily believe that that decision would have been made if we fully explained what is it that we are trying to achieve. That's what I wanted to mean. So sometimes the changes are done randomly, is the right way to say it. With the colleges amounts that will come out of the report per college and which colleges are being supported. And then the last one is Honorable Stain. That's the final one, TG. How far are we? How do we measure it? I think I've explained it. We would provide that report in terms of progress made with all the programs as well as what went to which category of farmers, the numbers reported and the actual supported. I must now just pick it up also on the numbers and actual supported. Is that one of the audit findings as we send out our internal audit hours, that we know when we approve that these are the beneficiaries. And we give them the list of the beneficiaries, which is what we will follow up. And when we get on site, that beneficiary has changed and it's someone else. But the Division of Revenue allows you for the changes to be made. One of the weaknesses then becomes the correspondence back to National to say, for these reasons, this beneficiary is changed and not that one. So those are some of the weaknesses that we need to improve. But we do have the list of who gets supported and for what. And the expertise of the panel is actual experts in animal crop. So it's comprised of multi-skill, which then does a thorough assessment of the plan that gets presented to it. That's it. And on the FMD fencing, we do not do FMD fencing for the maintenance one. Probably we will have to follow up and give the response. Oh, the chairperson, 86 farmers have received certification. How many have maintained the certification? For the ones who have received certification, check, all of them have maintained their access to market. Our issue is those who have received the certification, and when they are recertified, they then fail certification, and we need to follow up. Sometimes it has to do with record keeping, and we will provide the impact.
Thank you, Chair. Now, so that's why I tend to monopolize the mic, because you give the official and you give signals that share. There's a Mafisa president who must be, there's still a time for. So I think I need to strengthen that part of caucus with my colleagues. I think, Chair, by and large, it's very clear that we have not begun to handle this scourge in the same manner of urgency that the country is in. And, Chair, there are a number of reasons you can postulate. And most of the time when I say this reason, it's like you running away from things. The issue of capacity to do things within public service is almost zero. And we can put all projects together. If you don't have the right skill to execute the task, you run around. And the only way we have to do as far as evaluations are concerned was to ask the question that the honorable member asked. If you were doing all these things, at what point do you get aware that this finding has been repeating itself right in front of you? This fruitless expenditure, you have actually condoned it. Yes, it was something that was way beyond you. What is this? We know this is going to be a finding. And I'm saying to his colleagues, if this is what we have been doing, and it has been happening under us, then there must be change. Because there is no way we are going to come here and say we are going to change things. The person who is going to change this thing is the one who has failed to change it before. Unfortunately, government, public servants are entrenching their positions. That's a very serious challenge. The next one is this provincial concurrency, where the province has said they will do the project. It is here. They agree with us. When it comes to doing that project, they go and do it in their own way. The Eastern Cape came here and presented the best plan for planting, 54,000 hectares. End of the year, did 7. And right there, we're receiving calls from the MPs. There is a problem here. These people are not moving with this plan. It's a reality on the ground. Yet here, it was the best beautiful plan on what planting is going to be like. But right at the end, the people of the Eastern Cape were denied of 54,000. So we are facing these historical problems, Chair. And I want to just say, Chair, it's grappling with something that has been embedded in the culture. Unfortunately, it falls upon us as accounting officers to go back to 2010, 2011, when we arrived in 2017, to say, why is this irregular expenditure still here? And therefore, Chair, we have put in the emphasis on districts, and we have ensured that we are going to be putting a lot of monitoring and measurement. Of the people who applied for the 9 positions, for example, 45 of those people are directors and deputy directors, who I have now realized we need to retrain them into extension services, throw them on the ground, and remove the head office. The head office can be done by one. And fortunately, this minister just understood that. My boss just understood that. So the area of monitoring, we've taken ownership of it, both in essence and in allocation of funds. It's coupled with biosecurity, especially this swine fever that has just come up. And we're saying, let it not go to the Eastern Cape. We discovered shacks of pigs that were loitering everywhere. Suddenly, that entire area has got swine fever. So we are facing issues of monitoring.
Thank you.
I'm concluding, Chair. We monitoring we've addressed, Chair. And that is going to give integrity to what we say. At this point, just want to share with the committee that is the concern that is facing me as an accounting office. And I'm working on it already with the minister. And therefore, what you see here is something that I can promise you is going to change.
Honorable members, we are out of time, as there are other pressing issues that some of us need to get to. But in conclusion, I want us to hold on to what the DG has just said. You can't speak of the Eastern Cape committing 54 and only delivering 7. And only to discover that at the end, that in actual fact, they've delivered only 7. Denying the people of the Eastern Cape from that 54 to 7, almost 47. Now, I tend to run away from finger-pointing, DG, and try and look at what I'm personally doing or what the department is doing. So you should be asking the question, why are you picking it up as a department at the end that only 7% was delivered? Now it goes back to what the concern of the honorable members is, and of Parliament is that your monitoring systems are not in place. People have a tendency of coming to Parliament and uttering things, going onto the ground, they are not found. And this is the challenges that we are trying to address, so that you do not speak about a feedlot in KZN with 400 cattle. Honorable members go there and they discover that there is nothing on the land. It's an embarrassment in terms of the department, in terms of what this government is saying to the people of the Republic of South Africa. And I think, honorable members, we need to, at this point, look into these issues more in depth and try and find answers to them. And I hope that DG and the acting DG, that you will assist us in ensuring that the department is actually able to hold its own representatives accountable in the work they do. It was embarrassing on my point to get to KwaZulu-Natal and looking at the drought relief program that is supposed to have spent 203 million and not being able to account for it. So now we spent 203 million on what? On food and water for the cattle. Yeah, exactly how many cattle, and they can't give you numbers. They can't quantify how that 203 million rand was spent. So we will park it there, DG, and come back to it. But again, we sit and feel that this presentation don't really get us to where we need. The questions are not really coming to be fully answered as they are presented. And I hope, DG, we will be able to begin dealing with those issues as to how do we get concrete answers that speak to the issues that we are raising. Because right now, if I open a second round of questions, every single member will have a second round of questions to ask, because they're just not satisfied of the answers that they are receiving. But in terms of procedure, honorable members, the two presentations that we have not covered, we will request that they be slotted in next week's program. DG, so that every other program that was scheduled for the 10th of September, 13th of September, and the 17th of September takes a slot in the following week. It then means next week we will deal with these two presentations. On the week of the 13th, what was slotted for the 10th of September will be covered on the week of the 13th. And, yes. Oh, it's in the same week. It's Tuesday and Friday. Yes. So we will then be able to shift those to the 13th of September. Honorable members, with that said, we adjourn today's meeting. Stands adjourned. The minutes that we had planned to talk to, we will cover in next week's session. Thank you.